And we're holding on page 6 in Yuvamos, about the middle of the page, middle of Osfes. We were learning yesterday about the Shnius Larayas, the second level. You have the primary relatives, 20 or so of them, where the Torah says they're off limits to, for marriage or to have relations. And then you have, in addition, another 20 or so, some of them going many generations up or down, where the Chachamim also ban them as a siogla. This is a classic example of a siogla Torah, where they made a fence around the Torah and asked something that otherwise would have been mutter, in order to make sure that we don't end up doing something which is also Daraisa. So we were learning yesterday about where's a hint in the Torah for this concept. So Rava had brought a pasuk in connection with Arayas, and then Rav Yehuda and Rav Oshia had brought pesukim from Kehelas and Mishlei, respectively, from which we see that Shlomo is the one, Shlomo HaMelech is the one. He and his Beis Din made this takana of Shnius. Whenever, by the way, whenever we say that somebody made a takana, we don't mean him all by himself. He's not just sitting in his office and making takanas for the whole Jewish people. It means him together with his Beis Din. So the last thing we said, that Rav Oshia had brought a pasuk, pra'ehu al tavraboy, where the Gemara is understanding pra'ehu as meaning enlarge it. So you have an area, a way of rishoyim, as it talks about in the previous pesukim, that you can enlarge it, meaning, in other words, make the area, the zone that's off limits, larger, al tavra boy, so you don't come to go it, so you don't come to transgress it, stay me olavavar, turn aside from it and pass by, meaning, in other words, so the pasuk is implying when you have a way of rishoyim, for example, Arayas, enlarge the area, the zone, which is osir, so that you don't accidentally come to transgress and to trespass into the zone that's mutter. So Amar of Ashi, Moshel of Oshia, the Moha Dabar Domer, what can we compare if we say that pasuk is indicating the concept of the Siogla Torah of Arayas, then we can say that Rav Oshia, the pasuk that Rav Oshia is giving, suggests the following analogy. La'odim Meshamer Pardes, a person is guarding an orchard full of fruit trees. Meshamri b'machutz, if he stands on the outside and watches it, kulei meshamer, then he's able to guard the whole thing. He's standing outside, so therefore all of it is in his field of vision, and he's able to see if anybody is sneaking in. Midifnim, but if he goes inside the garden and he's going to watch it there, shall the fun of meshamer, shall akravein meshamer, then he's only going to be able to guard what's in front of him. He's not going to be able to see what's behind him. So people might be sneaking in from behind and taking things. The same way, in other words, the point is, Rav Ashi is saying that the point of the siyogim is don't be inside the garden like you're already among the isurim, and then you're going to try to guard yourself from them, but rather, because that would be like only being able to guard what's in front of you, rather stay outside of them, like over here, where we have Gzeiras D'Rabbanan about the Shnius, and that way you'll be able to guard the whole thing. But the Gemara says, V'hodir of Ashi Bedusahi. This that of Ashi is saying is Bedusa, which literally Bedusa means a fiction. So there's a number of places where the Gemara has that expression about things that Amiroyim say. It's a way of saying it's completely untrue. There are Meforshim who explain it means Rav Ashi never said this. Somebody else thought this up and misattributed it to Rav Ashi. There were places in the Gemara also where instead of the word bedusa with a dalet, it has barusa with a resh, which comes from the word bar, which means outside. So then that's a nicer way of saying basically this, that it's not true, that it's not correct, but it's more along the lines of it belongs outside the Beis Medrash. It's not something that belongs in the Beis Medrash where we should only be dealing with things that are completely true according to the logic of Torah. With that said, I mean, even we're calling this statement of Rav Ashi Bedusa, or another place in the Chas Barusa, it's still part of Torah after all. Rabbi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, has an expression on it. He says that, you know, it's all part of Chochmosi Ritzene Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same Eibishter who said that Torah has a certain truth to it and says, and then has this point as part of it, that same one says that it's Bedusa, that it doesn't fit with other things that we know of Hashem's Torah, and therefore we can't say that we accept it. But nonetheless, it's still, in a certain sense, part of Torah. Even Yaakov, and the reason is, so what's wrong with what Rav Ashi is saying? Hossam, because in the case of the garden, because the mushal is not quite like the nimshal. Hossam, when it comes to the garden, the orchard, shall a fun of me a mishtamer. At least fine. You're saying a guy is standing inside the orchard and trying to watch it. He's only going to be able to see what's in front of him. That implies at least some part of the orchard will be successfully guarded. The part behind him, not, but at least the part in front of him, yet. But over here, we love Shnius. If it weren't for the concept of Shnius, Poga be'er v'gufa. It's not a matter of that he might fail to keep some of the shnius. If you don't have the concept of shnius, he may wind up marrying an actual erva, which would be the equivalent, in other words, of the whole orchard would be available for thieves to take from, and he's not watching any of it. So therefore, so sort of Ashi's analogy doesn't really work in for the nimshal of Arayas and shnius. Even Yaakov points out, listen, I mean, so what was Rav Ashi's svara? You had to have some svara when he came up with this mashal. So he says, because within the Torah itself, you have certain things that are almost like the shnius, in that they're there in the Torah itself in order to guard you from closer relatives. Say, for example, you're not allowed to marry your daughter. It doesn't actually say that in Torah Shebichtav, but we learn it from Gzeirah Shavah, so it's considered a mitzvah daraisa. The Torah also says you're not allowed to marry your granddaughter. Now, even if a person were to go, suppose a person were to be over on the issue of marrying his granddaughter, sure, it's an erva min haTorah, but at least he hasn't married his actual daughter, which would be another kind of erva. So in that sense, you could say at least some of the arayas are guarded by, because in other words, the shnius in that case, so like three other, so they have, for example, let's say the shnius are two levels away from a daughter. So he might, if he's over on shnius, if he doesn't have the concept of shnius, he might mistakenly marry his own granddaughter, which would be an Issur Daraisa, but at least he won't have married his own daughter, which is also an Issur Daraisa. So in that sense, in a certain sense, you could say that some of the orchard would be guarded. Nevertheless, the Gemara doesn't really like that, because still, I mean, you're not going to start picking and choosing among Issurim Daraisa and say this one is more severe and this one less so. Okay. Getting back to psukim, from which we learn a remez to shlius. So we had a few psukim so far. Rav Kahana Omer Mehocha. Rav Kahana says you have another pasuk that indicates the necessity to make a shmirah, to make a siyog la Torah when it comes to arayas, because at the end of the section of arayas in Parshas Achrimos, it says ushmartim es mishmarti. You should guard my guarding. Which means, asu mishmeras l'mishmarti, so it means that Hashem is saying, make a guarding for my guarding. I am trying to guard you from being involved with Arayas, which would be an Issur Daraisa. You have to put on top of that a guarding to make sure that you don't even come close to them, namely by not marrying any of the Shnius either. Amalei Abaya l'Rav Yosef, Abaya asked Rav Yosef, Hodaraisi, well, in that case, if it says a shmartim as mishmarti, then that would make it an actual Issur Daraisa to marry these Shnius. Why are we calling them only Dirabonim? So okay, daraisa or pirshu rabbanon. It means that in a sense it's daraisa, but the chacham explained it. So what? Kol haTorah nami pirshu rabbanon. Well, in that case, everything in the Torah is like that. Every mitzvah in Torah Shebichtav, the Chazal explains to us the details of when that mitzvah applies and all the detailed dinim of it. So the Gemara says, no, you're right, it's not daraisa. Midrabbanon, the concept of shlius truly is drabbanon. Ukra asmachta ba'alma. What it is, the pasuk or shmartim es mishmarti is an asmachta. It's a support for it that the chachamim found that we can use as a support, as like a hint for the fact of this zera drabanan. But it's not really considered daraisa. That's not the actual drasha. That's not the actual limud that we learned from the pasuk. The Ritzvah points out, I think we've mentioned this before, that when we say that something that is an asmachta, usually we just understand, in other words, it's a din d'rabbanan, and the Chachamim looked around and they found a pasuk that hints to it, that supports it. The Ritzvah says it's almost the other way around. When you find something where the Gemara says it's an asmachta, what it really means is Hashem, to begin with, when he gave the Torah to Moshe, was saying, this would really be something good to do. But for whatever reason, that I've decided, whatever part of Chochmas or Ritzon Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I've decided not to make it part of the Torah that I'm giving. Nevertheless, I'm putting this pasuk in so that I expect the Chachamim to go and find such psukim and use them as a basis for making the Din Drabanan, so it'll still be considered Drabanan, which has various implications in Halacha. But the pasuk is there to give them a source to base themselves on, that they should realize this is something Hashem wants us to do. This is a gzera, a takana that Hashem wants us to make, and to go ahead and do that. Further on in the perek, it talks about the dinim of when a woman is chayiv and yibum and when she's not. So the Mishnah says, Mishi yeshle ben mikol makom, a piska, Mishi yeshle ben mikol makom, a person who, a man who has any kind of son, meaning, for example, even if a son is a mamzer, poter, eshes avim min hayibum, still it would mean that his father's wife, or all of his father's wives, are poter from yibum, because he has a son. Now the Gemara explains actually that would only apply if the son is Jewish. So if the father had a son with a goiter, with a shifcha, then that rule doesn't apply, because then that's not considered his son. But if he has a son, even from an erva, We're therefore that's a, so let's say, for example, so we have Reuven was so Reuven is married to Sarah, then he was mezana with Rivka, who was his sister or mother or what have you, and they had a child. That child is a mamzer. Nevertheless, he had Reuven has a child who is a Jew, and therefore Sarah and any other wives of Reuven will be potter from Yibum. And from Chalitza. And by the way, also the Mishnah mentions of Chayav Amakosai, by the way, that son is also considered his father's son insofar as that if he hits his father and causes him to bleed, then he's going to be Chayav Nis. So the Gemara asks on that, Amai, why would he be Chayav for hitting his father? His father is a Rosha. Kori Khan, can't we apply the Pasuk over here, the Nosi Ba'amcha Loisar? The Pasuk says, don't curse a Nosi among your people. And the word Ba'amcha means Ba'ose Maisa Amcha, only when he's acting the way that a Yid, that a member of your nation should act. So therefore, we learn from that, that if a person is doing Isurim, then you're allowed to curse him. And the Gemara is assuming that the same thing would be also that the son could hit him, or maybe at least he shouldn't do it like a Tchila, but at least that he shouldn't be Chayav Misa for it. So why are we saying that he's chayev for his makah? If his father fathered a mamzer, then it means he's a rosha. The answer is kid omer a pinchas mishmei a papa ba'oisa tshuva. Just like a pinchas says in the name of a papa that we can be talking about a case where he did tshuva. The context where a pinchas said that is at the end of chagiga. We learned not so long ago, the end of Chagigah, and Yaakov talks extensively about a lot of dinim of Tumah V'Tahara, and among other things, it discusses the point. We know that an Ama Oretz is considered by default to be Tomei, so you have a situation there where an Ama Oretz touched, where for example, somebody stole a Keli, and then later on he returned it, and we say, we can believe him to say that he didn't make it Tomei, so the question is how? How can we believe him on that? And Reb Pinchas explains, we're talking about when he did Tshuva, and he's not returning out of fear of the police or whatever, he's returning it because he's truly doing Tshuva, so then we can assume when he's saying that I didn't make it Tomei, then we can take him at his word, because he's trying to do proper Tshuva. Hachanami also tshuva. The same thing you could say over here that the father did tshuva. Well, therefore, his son, the mamzer, is not allowed to hit him or curse him. The mamzer, what do you mean? V'hai bar tshuva hu? How is this person capable, the father, capable of doing tshuva? V'hatanya, don't we learn in a braisa? We learned in Chagiga. Shimon is actually a mission over there. Shimon ben Menasya Omer. Ezum uvas lo yuchal listoin. What is an example of a crooked thing that can't be made straight? Zahabala erva v'hoilid men a mamzer. An example of that would be a man who has relations with an erva and any father's a mamzer. So that's lo yuchal listoin. So that on the face of it, he can't do tshuva. The answer is he could. He can't. We talked about this yesterday in a different context of the Gemara. It's true in a certain sense, as long as the mamzer is alive, there's a permanent reminder of his avera. Nevertheless, he can do tshuva as much as he's capable of, and now we can call him oisa maisa amcha. He's doing what a yid should. It's true, there is something, there is a residue of it left over, as the Alter Rebbe phrases it, that yod of an islab should be guf boss of a dumb, but nonetheless, the fact is he's able to do tshuva as much as possible, and now his son would be chayev if he hit him or cursed him. So that would be the case where the Mishnah is talking about that he would be chayev for doing that. Tosfos actually points out, let's say the father had done something that makes him chayev nidui. He mentioned Shem Shemayim Levatola or something else. So even though he did tshuva, he still may have to be put in nidui. The son should not be the shliach to put his father in nidui, because after all, he's still not allowed to curse his father. So there you have an example. His father has done tshuva, but nevertheless he's chayev nidui, and therefore his son shouldn't be the one doing it. Similarly, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, by the same token, that if the father is chayev malchus, the son shouldn't be the one administering the malchus. Where again, if the father hasn't done tshuva at all, then maybe he would be able to, because then again, he's not also to hit his father, but we're saying if his father did tshuva, then the son should not be the one to administer the malchus, and similarly, Tosfos is saying he shouldn't be the one to administer the nidui.
The malchus is his tshuva.
The malchus is his kapara. There's a difference between tshuva and kapara. You have to keep in mind, when a person is chayev misa or misas beistin or malchus, he can do all the tshuva he wants. It still doesn't take away the punishment, because the beistin has no way of looking into his heart and knowing what he truly thinks. Hashem can forgive him, but you still, the beistin still has to carry out the punishment. And yeah, the punishment is part of his kapara, yeah. Okay. Continues the Gemara. So now the next Mishnah mentions the point, mitzvah begodol liyabem, that the ideal mitzvah is that the eldest of the brother, the surviving brothers, should be the one to do yibum. If any of the other brothers does it, then it's fine, but it's supposed to be the eldest one. Now you have a pasuk that goes like this, which the Gemara is going to darish in, and the Gemara is going to darish in it, but first let's read the pasuk and understand it in its most surface sense. The pasuk says about yibum that, she has to marry the brother-in-law, V'hoya habchor asher teled, and it will be the firstborn to whom she gives birth, Yokum Hashem Ochav HaMeis, shall stand up in the name of his dead brother, V'lo Yimocha Shmoy Yisrael, so his name is not wiped out from among the Jewish people. So reading that pasuk on the surface, you would say, as the Gemara is going to point out, it sounds like it means, in other words, that you do Yibum, and then the first baby that woman has, you should be named after the dead brother, and that way perpetuate his name. But the Gemara is going to say that no, that's not what the pasuk means. So Tana Banan, V'hoya ha-bechor, when it says, and it shall be the bechor, doesn't refer to the bechor that she has later on after she gets married in Yibum. It means Mekan Shem Mitzvah B'Gadol Yabim. From here we learn that the eldest of the brothers, the bechor among the brothers, has the mitzvah to do Yibum. In other words, we take the V'hoya ha-bechor as basically a continuation of the previous pasuk, where it says that the Yavama Yavay Aleha, that her Yavam should have relations with her and take her as a wife, and do Yibum, V'hoya HaBachor, who should it be? That should be the Bachor. Asher Teled, when it says that she bears, that she gives birth, that means Pratla Ilonis She'eni Yeledis. That comes to tell us that Yibum is not, cannot be done with an Ilonis, who's not capable of giving birth. An Ilonis is a woman who has certain physical symptoms, the Gemara discusses them in detail later on in the Masechta, that she never, body never fully matures. It can mean a matter of hormones, it can be a matter of whatever it is exactly, but the point is that she doesn't have the normal body shape and various other certain bodily characteristics of women. So she's infertile, she's never going to be able to give birth. So therefore, the pasuk is implying with the word asher teled that a woman, it has to be that at least her body is the type that's capable of giving birth. Now it could be, she could be infertile for other reasons, she could be old, that doesn't matter. The point is at least she has the relevant parts do work, in a certain sense they work, but an ilonis is the derech hateva, it's not going to be able to work at all, she doesn't even have all the necessary parts basically. So therefore, Asher Teled comes to exclude her that Yibum and Chalitza are not applicable to her. When it says, Yokum Hashem Ochiv, when it says that he stands in place of his brother, that means Lenachla. That means as far as the inheritance, means that the Yavam inherits the property that used to belong to his brother. So you have brothers, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc. And Reuven died childless and Shimon does Yibum with Reuven's wife. And then Shimon is going to take over whatever part of the Nachla had originally gone to Reuven. It doesn't, well, Boyaz is something else, actually. Boyaz is buying the property that used to belong to Elimelech and company and buying it so that it remains within the family. He's not getting it for free. No, what we're talking about is something else. What we mean, in other words, is that, so their father Yaakov had property. And when Yaakov passed away, then it was divided up. Reuven got a double portion, and Shimon got a single portion, and Levi got a single portion, etc. Now what happens when Reuven dies? If no Yibum is done, and he doesn't have any children, it's going to be divided equally among all his brothers. But if Yibum is done, we're saying all of his property goes to Shimon, who's the one who did the Yibum. So that we learn from the words Yokom Hashem Ochi, and Lenachla. Ata oimel nachla, so you're saying that it means as far as nachla, oyeina ela l'shem. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it actually means as far as the name, as we would understand the surface meaning of the pasuk. Yosef koreinosi Yosef. If the dead brother was named Yosef, then we should name the baby who's born after the Yibum. We should name him Yosef. Yaakov koreinosi Yaakov. How do we know that it doesn't mean that? No, nemakan yokom alshem ochid, because we have a zera shava. Here it says he will stand in the name of his dead brother. Yaakov, when he's giving a bracha to Ephraim and Manasseh, he says, you, Yosef, if you have any more sons after them, they will be called in their brother's name on the Nachla. Meaning, in other words, only Shevet Manasseh and Ephraim are going to get individual Shevet territories in Eretz Yisrael. If you have any other children after them, they're just going to be included into Shevet Manasseh or Shevet Ephraim, as the case may be, for purposes of Nachla. So there we're not talking about the names. We're not saying if you have another son, he's going to be named Manasseh. If you have another son, he's going to be named Ephraim. It means they're going to be included in the Nachla with Ephraim or with Manasseh. So therefore, so it's the same expression, al shem acheihem and al shem ochiv, ma shem ha'omel ha'alam nachla. So there it's talking about that they receive a portion of the nachla of Ephraim and Menashe respectively. The same way when it says Yochum, Hashem Achav Ames over here means that he stands in place of his brother as far as inheriting his portion of the Nachla. It has nothing. The Gemara is going to point out in another line. The name is absolutely not necessary. So that's what it means. And when the pasuk finishes off, although Yimachas Shmoy, when it says his name should not be wiped out, that means Praplus Soris. From those words in the pasuk, we learn that the concept of Yibum does not apply if the man who died was a Soris, which is also similar to an Ilonis, who's a woman who has certain physical characteristics that her body is not developed properly, the same way a Soris is the parallel thing with a man, where he has certain physical characteristics, his body remains like that of a boy in certain ways. So again, it can be a matter of genes or hormone or chromosomes or hormones or who knows what, whatever. Sheshmoy Mochui, in effect, his name is already erased because he's incapable of having children. So that's how we read the pasuk. In other words, when we read the pasuk with these drushes, then it's saying the hoya b'chor, the mitzvah is that yibum should be done by the b'chor, asher teled, that the wife who's going to be taken and who's going to be married in yibum has to be capable of giving birth, not an ilonis. Yokum al shem ochev ames, the brother who does yibum will stand in the place of his brother as far as getting the nachla. Lo yimacha shmoy miyisrael, and it has to be that the brother who died is not one whose name is already erased because he's a sodis. So Omar Rava, and in fact Tosfos points out, really what it is what forces this whole explanation is the Gzeira Shava that we have on the words Al Shem Achiv. Once we have that, if we didn't have that Gzeira Shava, then we would explain the whole pasuk according to its pshat. But once we have that Gzeira Shava, that forces us to reinterpret the whole pasuk in this way that we just did. So Omar Rava, points out in this connection, Afagav the Bechol HaTorah Kula in Mikra Yotzim Midei Pshutai, throughout the rest of the Torah, a posik never loses its simple meaning. We have many times where we douch in a posik and we learn a halacha from it. Nevertheless, as much as possible, we're mekayim the simple meaning of the posik as well. I mean, sometimes, of course, we don't mean, for example, let's say you have an expression where it says about tefillin b'nei necha, and we don't literally put it between our eyes. Fine, because that's the words b'nei necha are an expression that means the part of the forehead above between the eyes. So it's not them, but in other words, you have various things where, let's say, for example, Savaru Esh B'chol Mosh Veseichem. We darshan it from various things. We darshan that you can't do Mitzvahs based in on Shabbos. We darshan that Havarah L'Lav Yotzas or L'Chalik Yotzas, that it tells us certain details about the Lamed, if a person is over on the Lamed Tes Melachos. Nevertheless, it also has the simple meaning. Don't light a fire, don't light a fire in your house as on Shabbos. So we always have that. But here, Rava says, "Asoi gzeira shava." Here, as a result of the gzeira shava, apiktim pshat elegamri. It takes away the pshat completely, in the sense that therefore there's no requirement al pi halacha to name the firstborn baby after the yibum, after the dead brother. With that said, that's on the halacha level, and that's so. In fact, the Zohar tells a story where one time Rab Abba visits, the Zohar tells a story, Rab Lev Yitzchok analyzes it in one place in his writings, where Rab Abba visits a certain place, and a guy comes and tells him, "I did Yibum, and I named the baby after my dead brother," and Rab Abba says, "No, instead name him Idi." And Rav Levick discusses why he named him Idi, because it stands for Avraham Yitzchak David Yaakov. So like he's giving a bracha to be like the Dalad Raglei Merkava. The point is that Rav Abba first has to tell him that no, don't name him Yaakov, because then you would be misinterpreting the pasuk as it's saying over here. With that said, though, an interesting thing that Al-Bag actually brings as a pasuk in Divrei HaYomim, we know the Gemara we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara about Er and Oinon, the sons of Yehuda who died for their averus. And then you have Yehuda's one surviving son, Shelah, and then afterwards he had relations with Tamar and Peretz and Zerach. So in Divrei HaYomim, it mentions among the children of Shelah, it mentions his firstborn was named Er, and the Rabag says that was in token of the simple meaning of the pasuk. Hayos, that in the end, Shelah didn't do Yibum with Tamar, in the end, Yehuda did. But nevertheless, he took the initiative to name his firstborn after his dead brother, so his name is not completely erased. I guess you could say, to for, I mean, here we're saying that it's not necessary to do that after Yibum, but after all, Shelah didn't do Yibum, so therefore he might as well. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about the point that it talks about if a Jewish man has relations with a goiter or with a shifcha, then the child is not considered Jewish. That leads into a little bit of discussion about certain dinim of geirus. There's more dinim of geirus in more detail later in the Masechta. So the Nechemya Omer, Echod Geiri Arayas, so Rav Nechemia says, whether you have Geirim, people who became Geirim because of lions, because of fear of lions, a classic example being the Kusim, when Sancheiriv, after he took the Aseres HaShvatim into Golus, he had resettled the place over there with Goyim from Kusa and various other places in and around Bavel, and they're worshipping Avodah Zarah, and the Pasuk describes lions were coming and attacking them, and they were afraid, and they sent a message to Sancheiriv, apparently the god of this land doesn't like us worshipping our idols over here, what do we do? Now, the Goyim in those days had a notion that every land has its own god, so they figured Hashem is Lahavdil like that, and therefore, so when we're in his land, then he can't tolerate that. So the upshot of it is that they became quasi-Geirim, as we have throughout Shas, the famous Machlokas, whether they're valid Geirim or not, but they became Geirim out of fear of the lions. So Rav Nechemia is saying whether they became Geirim because of the fear of the lions, the Echad Geir Chaloimus, or a person became a Geir because he had a dream that he was told to become a Geir. The Echad Geirim Mordechai the Esther, or the Geirim from the time of Mordechai and Esther, where you have in the Megillah, Rabbi Me'ama or Misyadim, that many people are pretending to be Jews, or maybe even actually becoming Jews. In all those cases, Rav Nechemia says, Einam Geirim Abshis Gairu Bizmanazeh. They're not Geirim unless they become Geirim in our time, in Bizmanazeh, in our times. So Gemara says, what do you mean? What do you mean in our times? They're not living in our times. And Rashi points out, what about, for example, let's say you had many Geirim, many valid Geirim in previous generations. For example, the Gemara tells us Nebuzaradan became a Geir. So what does it mean? Ela emakib bizmanazeh. What it means is it has to be like it is nowadays, where the Jewish people are subjugated by the Goyim and all, and there's no reason to think that a Goy is becoming a Geir in order to join in Jewish wealth and power. So the Gemara ends up discussing this point, and Afa Pishkvar Helu Halacha Kedivra Emukumak Geirimim. So the Gemara ends up concluding the Halacha is not like Rav Nechemia. The Halacha is actually that any kind of Geir, no matter what the motivation was, then B'dieved, as long as it was done by a proper Beis Din, then it's a valid Geirus. So Afila Hochi. So nevertheless, I said a little wrongly. The connection of this piece over here is that the Mishnah mentions, incidentally, in this connection where it says that if a Yid has relations with a Goyta and has a son, then that son is not considered a son as far as Yibum or anything. So the Mishnah also mentions that if there's rumors going around about a person that he's been involved with a Goyta or a Shifcha, then Lachatchila he shouldn't marry her even after she's Misgai or even after she's Squeed. So that's the point over here. The Gemara says that Rav Nechemia would say anyway she wouldn't be a valid Geir if we think that she was Misgai or for improper reasons. The halacha is in the end that I argue. Afilo hochi, nevertheless, hanitan minakusis minisgaira, if a person, there's rumors going around him that he was involved with a goita, and then she became a ger, also the koinsa lahatchila, then lahatchila, he's not allowed to marry her. So, mishum de Rav Ashi, or Asi. The reason is, based on what Rav Ashi, or Rav Asi says, Rav Asi, as the pasuk says, "Hoser mincho ikshus peh," take away from yourself crookedness of speech. Meaning, people are going to speak about you and say that you did something crooked. Keep that away. Don't allow such rumors to proliferate. Ulazus fasayin harchet mincho, and keep far away from yourself wagging of tongues. So, in other words, don't act in a way that's going to reinforce the original coil. People are already speaking, and then. Spreading rumors about you that you did such and such wrong, don't reinforce those rumors by then your taka going to go and marry this woman and people are going to say, oh, look, it was true all along. In fact, Maharsha says the expression ikshus peh and the expression hanitan that he's rumored about means even if he himself knows that it's not true, but because of the chshad is a reason that he shouldn't marry her lachatchila. Because again, hosim l'cha ikshus peh. So even though it's ikshus, it's a crooked thing. It's not at all true. Nevertheless, because there's that curl, don't act in a way that's going to end up reinforcing it. It's similar to we learned in Yerushalmi Shkolin that the Gemara had brought the point over there that a person has to act in a way that's not only correct in Hashem's eyes, but also correct in people's eyes. The Yisim Nikiyim Hashem Am Yisrael and other psukim that the Gemara had brought to back up that point. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions Tanan Rabbanan, Ein Mekablam Geirim Limosa Mashiach. We will not be allowed to accept Geirim in Mashiach's times, because then the likelihood is that why are they joining the Jewish people? Is because at that point we're going to be on top and we're going to be powerful and everything, and then the likelihood is that they're joining in order to enjoy that. Payotzeboy, in a similar vein, Loi Kiblu Geirim Loi B'Mei David V'Loi B'Mei Shlomo. By the same token, they didn't accept Geirim in David's or in Shlomo's times, because again, there's a good reason to suspect that they're doing it because they want to join in the wealth and the superpower status that the Jewish people had at that time. Tosfos points out there are some exceptions that we find from that time. First of all, we find that there was Bas Paroi, who Shlomo married, and all of other Shlomo's wives, all of Shlomo's other wives as well. But Amram stresses the point that he was Megayah all of them, because he's not going to be over on having relations with a goita. You also have Tosfos mentions of the character in David's times in Ittai Hagiti, where the Gemara explains that there are some soldiers in David's army that are mentioned in Malachim and in Divrei Hayamim that bear names that mean that they came from foreign countries, for example, Uriah Hachiti, that the Gemara says doesn't mean that they're Goyim from that country, it means they're Jews who lived in that country. But Ittai Hagiti, the Gemara explains, was actually a Goy from Gas who became a Ger. So how does that not violate this rule? Tosfos says, listen, they were already rich and powerful in their countries. They're not becoming Gerim in order to join in the riches and power of the Jewish people, because they already have that and in the Goyish lands they came from. What about Tosfos says further on in the Masechta, we'll get to it next week sometime, Be'ez Hashem, or the week after that, I don't know. You have a whole story over there involving the Givonim and the fact that they were angry at what Shaul had done to them years earlier. And the upshot of the story is it says that 150,000 and some Goyim became Jews. So how does that not violate this? Tosfos says, me'atzmam nisgayru. They became gerim on their own. Meaning, not literally on their own. Of course, he can't become a ger on his own. But in other words, like they found like bati dinim of hedyotis who don't realize this point and were megayer then. So in other words, a reputable basin shouldn't do that, but b'di'evit, it's done and then it's done. And then Tosfos mentions also, what about, you have the cases involving Hillel, where a goy comes in and says, make me a ger on condition I'll become a Kohen Gadol, among the other stories over there. So the vote is, Tosfos says, Hillel knew that eventually he's gonna come l'shem Shemayim. So Mephoshim point out anyway that in Hillel's times the Jewish people are not exactly on top anyhow, so you have less of an issue of that, but even this particular guy is saying, I'm a Nasr, the She'er, a Kohen Gadol, and figures that he's going to be able to wear the rich, beautiful clothing of the Kohen Gadol, fine, but Hillel knows that deep down he has a better motivation and he just doesn't know better right now. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Maikra, where's a pasuk that expresses this point that we're not going to accept Gerim Limos HaMashiach? The pasuk says, "Hein gur yogur efes me'osi." Who is it? Behold, those who live will be nothing if it's not for me. The simple meaning of the pasuk is something like "gur" means to be fearful, like "saguru mipneish." So the simple meaning of the pasuk is something like "Hein gur yogur efes me'osi." You should know nobody has any reason to be afraid unless it's coming from me. And the pasuk continues, "Mi gur ito chalayich yipo." Whoever is living with you is going to fall or is going to surrender to you. So that's the simple meaning of the pasuk. But the Gemara is dashing the last half of the pasuk. Mi gor itach, alayich yipo, means mi gor itach. Whoever lived with you as a ger, ba'ami yusuch, during the time when you Jewish people were poor and subjugated, uda alayich yipo. Now he will be able to yipo together with you. La'asid lapa yipo means not to fall. It means to rest, to encamp, like we find by Yishmael, apnei kolach of nafal. So the word nafal, the shodesh nafal, can mean to rest, to encamp. So mi gor itach, those who live with you during the time of galus, alayich yipo, they will be able to rest with you, la'asid lavei. Abel idach loy, but not anybody else, not people who first are coming as gerim, la'asid lavei. Actually, there's an interesting thing where there's a Mefurdish, a Rishon named Rabbi Eliezer Midelgansi. He was a Talmud of the Rashbam, and he wrote a Pirush on a number of Svarim of Tanakh. He says the first half of the Pasuk fits with this also. Hashem is saying, Hein Gur Yogur. You have people who think that they can live in Eretz Yisrael and be Gerim and be the masters of it. You should know, Efes Me'osi. It's nothing if I don't approve of it. Because only Mi Gur Itach Halayich Yitro. So in other words, even in the context of the pasuk, it's not just a drasha. In other words, the pasuk is saying, you Jewish people are worried. You have people who think they can take over Eretz Yisrael and live in it and then do whatever they want. You should know, nobody has the ability to live in Eretz Yisrael and to be a master of it unless Efes Me'osi, unless it's with my permission. And you'll see, La'asid Lavei Migor Itach Halayich Yipo.
All right.
Mis Yadim literally means like they made themselves Jews. So it can mean they pretended to be Jews, but the Gemara seems to be taking it, at least Reb Nechemiah is taking it in the sense that they actually became, or at least tried to become Jews, and Reb Nechemiah is saying it didn't work because they're only doing it because of their fear of what's going on over there with Mordechai, So that's the thing. Reb Nechemiah would say that they're trying to become Geirim, but Reb Nechemiah would say since their motivations were no good, then they're not actually Jews. It's only Mis Yadim. The Chachamim would disagree and say it's true they shouldn't be becoming Geirim because of such reasons, but b'dieved they did, then they're considered valid Geirim. You have people who become Geirim not necessarily for the best of motives. Generally, batidinim, reputable batidinim, usually try to ferret out this thing, but, you know, they don't always, and sometimes it happens. They're Megayer somebody. Now, you have reform and conservative geirim. We're not even talking about that, because they're such batidinim, a chalal posel to administer a geirus. We'll talk about that. We're going to have soon, in the next couple of them tomorrow, Beth Hashem, we'll have a sugya about the dinim of geirus, but when it's a based in, where they accept Torah Misinai, and they accept Torah Shabbat Peh and everything, but they don't take enough care, like these both the dinim had yotas that Tosfos is referring to, that were Megaya people without the proper motivations, then find v'dievet it works. Yoyim Mashiach Ogola. Mashiach's neshama incorporates within it all the neshamas of the Jewish people. He's a neshama kelelas of all the Jewish people. That is why he has the ability to take all Jewish people out of Golus. As in fact, the Ramaz says on the Zohar that Mashiach is b'chinas yechida. He is the all-encompassing yechida of the Jewish people. Now, we know there's nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. Dovid HaMelech was zoicha to be the nefesh of the Jewish people. Eliyahu was the ruach. Moshe Rabbeinu was the neshama. Adam Arishin was the chaya. And Mashiach will have that aspect of yechida. And that means, vice versa, also every yid has a spark of Mashiach in him, because every yid has a yechida, and that yechida is part of that yechida clawless, which is Mashiach. What? Yeah. There's a higher level than Yechida. Etzema Nefesh. Okay. Continuing with halachas of bathing and washing on Shabbos. So it mentions you're allowed to put bran on you. You're allowed to rub bran on your hands. I guess they used to do that back in the day to clean their hands, even if your hands are wet. But you can't actually pour water on it, because that would be a tolda of losh. Now, you can't, though, rub your hands with salt or with soap, because when you wash it with water, then you're doing nimoyach. It dissolves, and therefore you have an issue of the malacha of memoreach. Liquid soap, by the way, is not quite so simple either. You have thinner liquid soaps, which are not, there's no memoreach. You can't really spread them because they're fairly liquid, but the more semi-solid type of list, some of the thicker liquid soaps, are taka not so glatt in halacha to use on Shabbos.
Hand sanitizer is okay.
Hand sanitizer, I don't know necessarily. It's also a very thick liquid which you actually spread. The truth is there are different kinds of hand sanitizers. I don't know that you can generalize. You have some that are more liquidy and some that are a lot more like a semi-solid, almost like a waxy consistency. So there is that distinction between the different kinds.